All right, y'all, welcome to the show. Today, we're going to dive into a bunch of stuff. So I'm going to lead here in just a second with Tulsi Gabbard all but begging to be Trump's vice president on Trump's son's podcast. Whole lot of ick in that conversation. Then we'll get to Sean Fain laying the smackdown in a congressional hearing. My guess is he absolutely shocked the senators who were there with how aggressive he was and leaning into the class politics. That's incredibly based. Then we have, I got to be honest with you guys, one of the most shocking CNN segments I've ever seen, because they're going to talk about Bernie's new bill, which is a 32-hour work week. So it's a four-day work week. And CNN basically comes out swinging in favor of it. I mean, not something I would ever expect. But I'll give a little twist at the end. I'll tell you why I think they're doing that. Then we'll get to the new reporting behind the scenes about what's actually going on with Biden and his close staffers. Apparently, he's both angry and anxious, and he's been yelling and screaming and cursing about the state of the race. So even though they're putting on a cool front when it comes to, you know, how they're presenting to the world, they are panicking. There's no doubt about it that they are panicking. And then we'll also get to Texas implementing this new super conservative law to basically crack down on Pornhub. There's a number of states that have done this, but the backlash to that, there's some new evidence of a backlash to this anti-porn crusade brought about by Republicans. You're not going to want to miss that. So everybody, do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. It helps me out massively. It doesn't cost anything at all. We're trying to get to 10 million subs, and we got quite a while to go, but you build it one at a time. So hook a brother up with a sub. Thank you, guys. For those of you who have subbed, I love you to death. All right, now let's go ahead and jump into it. So Tulsi Gabbard, of course, ran for the Democratic nomination. Shit, how long ago was that now? Was that I think it was 2020, right? It wasn't 2016. It was 2020. And she sort of positioned herself as, you know, I'm like a younger female version of Bernie. Perhaps the issue that she leaned into the most on the campaign trail was that she's anti-war. So Bernie was anti-war also, but he was more heavy on economic stuff and domestic stuff, class politics. Tulsi was a little more the opposite, leaning into anti-war stuff. That's how she positioned herself. And look, not going to sugarcoat it. She didn't do well in the election. She didn't, I don't even know what she ended up, 1%, 2%, if that, had to drop out pretty quickly. And, you know, you could argue, hey, Bernie had that lane. So somebody else jumping in using the Bernie lane, it just didn't add up. But since then, she's been engaged in a slow motion pivot where, you know, before it was, I'm positioned to the left of many of the Democrats, I'm like Bernie. And then over time, it sort of became Democrat derangement syndrome, where I only attack Democrats, whereas in the past, used to attack Democrats and Republicans and the party structure of both parties. And then now, she's come full circle. And now, you know, she launched a podcast a while ago, and if you listen to it, the thing she was concerned about, it was very, like, enlightened, centrist-y type stuff. It was no longer left-wing arguments. Now she's come full circle. She goes on Trump Jr.'s podcast, and she all but begs to be Donald Trump's VP. Now, the reason she's doing this is because there was some indication in some polls, I think at CPAC, for example, was one of them, where she did surprisingly well. She wasn't in the top three, I don't think, in terms of who people want to be Trump's VP, but she was up there enough. She got enough of a percentage, and there's been enough articles hinting at her being on that short list where she feels like, hey, I might actually have a shot at being Donald Trump's vice president for 2024. So now that brings us to this. Let's watch, and then we'll break it down.
Vice president, something I've also seen a bunch here, and actually for the last few weeks. How are you responding to that call?
I'd be honored. I'd be honored to serve my country in that way. I'd be honored to actually be in a position to help President Trump execute his policies, bringing the experience that I have had of being on the front lines of many of these battles and actually understanding what we're up against. And so whether you're talking about securing the border, reducing inflation, improving our economy, stopping these Democrats or and establishment Republicans stopping these warmongers from continuing to push us closer and closer to war, not just in one country, but in multiple regions across the world. These are things, if I had the opportunity and privilege of being able to serve and support President Trump in actually executing these policies, I'd be honored to do so.
She's total 180 from what she was. You go back, don't take my word for it. I don't want you to take my word for it. You go back and watch her campaign launch video where she gave a speech. I think she was in Hawaii, her home state. She gives a speech. The issues she hits, the themes she drives home, it sounded like Bernie Sanders giving a speech. Everything sounded like Bernie. It was a fire breather from the left, attacking the establishment, sticking to the issues. Now she's desperate, nearly begging to be Trump's vice president. I'd be honored to be Trump's vice president. You'd be honored. She endorsed Biden in 2020. The moment I knew, here was the moment I knew, oh, this is over, that she's going to do the full Dave Rubin. The moment I knew was when it was in the midst of the debate around Build Back Better, when they were crafting Build Back Better. I believe they had just released it. Bernie, of course, was probably the loudest voice in the room in crafting Build Back Better, and they were trying to get it passed. And at the time, I don't know if it was right then or just before it, but Tulsi started going on Fox News like all the time. She's like the favorite resident Democrat who will go on Fox to only shit on Democrats. And they love that role. They bring on a black person to shit on black people. They bring on a woman to shit on women. You guys know the drill. This is a tale as old as time. So she would go on all the time. And right then I was like, red flaggington. But then I remember the day she goes out there. We covered it on the channel. And she attacks Build Back Better. Not because it didn't go far enough, but because in her mind, it went too far. It's bad for the debt. It's bad for the deficit. It's big government spending. Literal, flat out, right-wing economic arguments. It's the type of stuff where if she was around when the New Deal was rolled out, she'd be like, this goes too far. This is socialism. That we need to not do so much spending. Flat out, austerity, libertarian, Ayn Rand-brained political position. That's when I knew, oh, it's over. It's over. She's doing the full Dave Rubin. And now, shit, this may have eclipsed Dave Rubin. He did the whole, I'm the last liberal left, bro. I'm the liberal who's going to keep it real and tell you that conservatives are actually right about everything, bro. And then now he's almost taking the mask off a little bit and he's just like, I am a conservative. That's what I am. Tulsi, I don't know what the fuck she would call herself, but when you're begging to be Trump's vice president, I don't know what you want me to say. All right, now let's get to the part of this that annoyed me the most. First of all, the rank careerism, and we'll come back to that in just a minute, right? She's desperately looking for a lane. How do I stay relevant? How do I stay relevant? She felt like every bridge was burned on the Democratic side when Bernie didn't win and she couldn't get a position in that administration and be a big left-wing figure. When it was Biden that ended up winning, all the bridges were burnt on the left-wing side. You know, the Hillary Clinton types and the Joe Biden types, even though she endorsed Joe Biden, they don't, not that big of fans of her. Right? The media is not that big a fan of her. So she felt like, shit, I got no more opportunities over here. She did the full pivot. But she brings up, well, I would like to help him be anti-war. Go after all these warmongers. Tulsi, Trump increased drone strikes by over 400% when he was president. He kept us in Iraq. He kept us in Afghanistan, even though he said he wouldn't. He tried to assassinate, or he did assassinate, General Soleimani, a top Iranian commander who was on the field fighting ISIS. That was illegal, by the way, under U.S. law and international law, and it nearly sparked a much broader war in the region. He tried to coup Venezuela. You remember the whole thing? What's his name? Was it Juan Guaido? Where they were just pretending? Like, yeah, this guy's actually the president of Venezuela. We're declaring him the president. It's like, he's not, so I don't know what the fuck you think you're doing. They got caught trying to do a coup. He ripped up the Iran agreement, which got us closer to war. By the way, an agreement that they were following. It was one of the best things Obama did. He ripped it up. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He now says he wants war with Mexico. He wants to designate the drug cartels as terrorists and then open up the door for us to go in there and start doing airstrikes on our sovereign ally without their approval. He armed Saudi Arabia to do a genocide against Yemenis, and then when Bernie Sanders and Mike Lee tried to block that in the Senate, he vetoed it, swatted it aside, and said, I'm pro-genocide. He did the Abraham Accords, which helped led to October 7th. It's a giant middle finger to Palestinians. He moved the embassy to Jerusalem, which again, giant middle finger to Palestinians, that helped lead to October 7th. The idea that this man is anti-war is fucking factually wrong. And just to refresh everybody's memory, remember, she endorsed Joe Biden, like I said, in 2020. She did. Another crucial piece of evidence that she's just posturing. It's just a grift. Like, I got to try to find a way to be relevant. Remember, do you guys remember when Biden pulled out of Afghanistan? And according to the media, oh my God, the sky is falling. You know, this is the worst thing that's ever happened ever. Not the war itself. Not that we were there for over 20 years. That's not what they were mad about. They're mad at, oh my God, you pulled out. You pulled out, and now it's ugly. Well, of course it's going to be ugly. The fucking government is completely fake. It's held together like paper mache. It's never going to be pretty when you pull out of that center. But he pulled out. And Biden, to his credit, told the media to suck his nuts when they were trying to say the sky's falling and you got to go back in. They portrayed it as the worst thing in the world. And literally, you could count on one hand the number of people who were actually openly out there defending Biden's move to pull out. The entire media was implying we should get back in. There was all sorts of anger and desperation and sadness. And the implication of everything was, why'd you pull out? We should get back in. Or at least if you're going to pull out in a more clean way. And there is no clean way. The Afghan government is fake. It's fake. The Taliban's going to take back over. That's the way it's going to happen. No matter what, no matter how you pulled out, it was going to happen. And Tulsi Gabbard, who was one of the leading voices of Let's Pull Out of Afghanistan, she didn't defend him at all. She didn't say a goddamn word. Say, actually, he's right. Actually, you guys are hyping up how bad the pullout is. What you really should have done is covered the Afghanistan report, which came out like a year before, which showed how every single step of the way, our own generals, our own commanders, like, oh, what the fuck are we doing here? This is crazy. Highlighted all the war profiteering, all the waste and the fraud and the abuse. Just a giant boondoggle. They didn't cover that report at all. But then when he pulled out, oh my God, this guy's falling. It's the worst thing in the world. How dare you pull out of Afghanistan? And she did not come out and defend pulling out of Afghanistan. That's when I was like, okay, it was over. I see what she's doing now. And now you have literally all, I mean, it's come full circle, right? There's no more denying it. You want to be Trump's VP? You want to be Trump's VP. Well then, okay, I'll ask the question. What does she actually believe in? I'll ask you guys. Look, I'm one of the kinder in this field where I try my best to always avoid the supercharged accusations. Like, I don't like people say grifter way too much. In this instance, I'm kind of comfortable saying it. Because it is the full Dave Rubin. We've seen this before. It's the whole post-left thing. Like, oh yeah, you know, I was on the left, but then I got my feelings hurt from some things, and now I'm just going to bash the left all the time. And, oh, would you look at that? These Republicans are patting me on the head. They're kind of nice. Oh, I guess I'll move a little further right. And now I've gone full circle and I'm just a conservative Republican. Okay. All right. But own it. That's just own it, though, right? Just own it. Don't give me this, oh, no, you don't really understand what she's saying, bro. What she believes, bro. That's my question. What does she believe? Do you know? Does she know what she believes? I don't think she does. I don't think she does. I think it's all... Where's the wind right now? What wave can I ride to relevance? Because it is impossible. Look, she's a grown-ass woman. She's a grown-ass woman. You're telling me she went from the younger female version of Bernie Sanders. That's my ideology, and that's what I'll argue for in public relentlessly. She went from that to, I want Mike Pence's old spot. And there's been no change? No, that you could not be more opposite. And this was my main critique of Dave Rubin too, right? It was, you're a grown-ass man. Look, if you're a grown-ass person, am I going to hold it against you if you change your mind on 2, 3 policy issues or topics? Shit, maybe even a little more than that, 4. That's called maturing. That's called growth. when you look at things, and it's, you know, still maybe a little more nuanced the older you get. You try to steel man the opposing perspective, and you might grow and change your mind on a couple things here and there. That's just called growth. That's called evolution. Everybody does that. But when you change your mind on like 98% of the things you said you believed in, that's not organic. See, because that's more like a religious conversion, right? It's like when somebody goes, I was a Baptist, and now I converted to Islam. What? What? So you changed your mind on everything, and you're a grown-ass person, and you change your mind on everything in, like, a very short time frame. It's like, that doesn't really happen. That's not a thing. Unless you're just a fundamentalist, you shut your brain off, you go from one thing to the other thing, and it's not really about logic or reason or trying to figure out the truth, right? In this instance, sorry, it smells like a grift. Because it is a fucking grift. So, you know, if there's 58 issues and you change your mind on 55 of them, yeah, I'm going to look at you a little sideways. I'm going to be like, huh, well, that's weird. Because usually by the time you're an adult, like I said, most things you probably are set on, and then you evolve every now and then on 3, maybe 4 things, right? But, oh, I changed my mind on absolutely everything. Did you? Wasn't that mighty fucking convenient, given the career trajectory you're doing and where you're trying to fit in? So, anyway, I got no sympathy for that, man. I got none. Because that's my flaw, too, is I take people at face value, right? I'm almost embarrassed that I had Tulsi as my number 2 behind Bernie. When you look back now and what she's become, I'm fucking embarrassed about that. And that's my flaw, is I take people at face value and assume what they're saying they believe is what they actually believe. And I don't want to get into ulterior motives, what's really in their head, what are they trying to do here? Are they angling? Are they positioning? Are they trying to find a path to relevance? That's my fault. That's my problem, is I take people at face value too much. Every now and then, you do have to dig a little deeper. You do have to get to the motivations. You have to get to what's going on in their mind. You do have to be a little more skeptical of even what people say their whole thing is, right? And Tulsi's the best example of that. I was duped hard. Turns out, I don't think she ever believed it all along. I don't think any of it was real. Because you just don't have this big of a trend. You endorsed Biden in 2020. 2020! 4 years ago. Now you're like, I'd love to be Trump's VP. Please pick me! By the way, he's almost certainly not going to pick her. My guess is it's going to be either Kristi Noem or Elise Stefanik. I think Kristi Noem is the most likely. But having said that, it actually wouldn't be a bad pick for Trump, because he struggles with moderates. He struggles with people who are not already in his little cult, right? And just the fact that you can say, you know, minority woman who was a Democrat 7 seconds ago, that I think might actually, because it's not like anybody who's part of the MAGA cult is going to leave because Tulsi's now the running mate. That's not going to happen. But do you pick off some people who don't pay close attention and they go, oh yeah, maybe she's more moderate? Yeah, that might work. So it's actually not, on paper, a horrible pick, but I also just don't think it's going to happen. But man, you guys tell me, what do you make of Tulsi's weird, colossal transition? So Sean Fain is, of course, a union leader. He's the head of the UAW. He's made quite a name for himself recently. He went to Congress to testify in front of this committee. And if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think this may have been at Bernie Sanders' hearing on the 32-hour work week. So Bernie Sanders proposed a bill, 32-hour work week, basically 4-day work week. Big rollout. So a bunch of articles about it. To my surprise, I'm happy that there's all these articles about it. Usually good ideas are proposed and nobody ever talks about them and then they die quickly, right? No, this is making a little bit of a splash. So I think he's speaking at this. And man, he is going to utter some things in this committee hearing that people in the Senate maybe have never heard. He's going to go hard in the paint, son, and he's really going to lay it down. So let's watch, and then we'll break it down.
Many in this room will say, they'll say, people just don't want to work, or working class people are lazy. But the truth is, working class people aren't lazy. They're fed up. They're fed up with being left behind and stripped of dignity as wealth inequality in this nation, this world, spirals out of control. They're fed up that in America, three families have as much wealth as the bottom 50% of citizens in this nation. That is criminal. America is better than this. So I want to close with this. I agree there is an epidemic in this country of people who don't want to work. People who can't be bothered to get up every day and contribute to our society, but instead want to freeload off the labor of others. But those aren't blue-collar people. Those aren't working-class people. It's a group of people who are never talked about for how little they actually work and produce and how little they contribute to humanity. The people I'm talking about are the Wall Street freeloaders, the masters of passive income. Those who profit off the labor of others have all the time in the world. While those who make this country run, the people who build the products and contribute to labor, have less and less time for themselves, for their families, and for their lives.
Damn, son. Woo! He flipped that narrative right on its head. Oh, you want to talk about parasites? You want to talk about moochers? You want to talk about freeloaders? Oh, I'm your Huckleberry. I'll tell you who fits that category, and fits it just right. Damn, Sean Fain. So, look, I mean, you guys know, I've talked about this on the show before, but I don't think it's going to happen, but I hope it's going to happen, that Jon Stewart went back to The Daily Show, he's doing his show, he's doing a great job over there, and that, you know, maybe he'll throw his hat in the ring for the next election, because, sorry, but we're through the looking glass. Right. And we're at the point now where one of the only things that can make the media pay attention to a real lefty is if they're an A-list celebrity, if they're a comedian, if they're somebody who uses controversy to their ends. And that's what Jon Stewart is. You know, in order for a lefty to actually win, it needs to be somebody who's undeniable, like a senator or an A-list celebrity. Maybe you get away with a B-list celebrity, but even a congressperson, that ain't going to fly. Right? Like, we need to elbow our way into the room. The way to do that is to have somebody who's undeniable. So I would love it if Jon Stewart ran in 2028. I don't think it's going to happen. I would love to see it happen. But if it's not Jon Stewart, sweet Jesus, this man right here, I hope he does it. Right? I hope he does it. Because he has consistently shown that he's all about this union life. And, I mean, this guy, I have no doubt he'd be like FDR when it comes to economic stuff. I have no doubt about it. None. He's a fighter. He's not afraid to get in the mud and fling it. I think he runs circles around most of the people who step to him. Here he is, totally flipping the, like, welfare queen narrative on its head, the freeloader narrative on its head, and saying, yeah, I got some freeloaders for you. They're called multimillionaires and billionaires. They're the problem. They're the masters of passive income. You know what passive income is? My money makes money. I invest it, and then it does the work itself, and then I sit on my ass, collect it, and guess what? Oh, look at that. I only happen to pay a 14% tax rate, whereas your ass is working all day, every day, 5 days a week, and you have to pay 30% in taxes. Huh. Would you look at that? So I don't have to work, my money makes money, and I pay a lower tax rate. How is that fair? It's not fair. Everybody knows it's not fair. Calling out the extreme income and wealth inequality that we have in this country. Guys, these aren't just inevitable facts of nature that we have to accept. These are things that are policy choices. These are things that can be changed. You just have to have the will to change them and then execute on that front. That's what it is. And we don't have the will to change it because, unfortunately, our politicians are all bought by multinational corporations and billionaires, and the same people he's going after are the same people that own the politicians, so they rig the laws in their favor. That's the reality. And so here he is. Again, I think this was in the 32-hour work week hearing. I think he's arguing in favor of it, but he got a great pot shot in there at the Wall Streeters and the billionaires, and this is what we need to revive. Certainly moving into 2028, this is what we need to revive. And so he's a great, if it's not Jon Stewart, homie's a great option, but, you know, I've seen a lot of people like him who sort of get swallowed up by the system and spit out, and Lord only knows what kind of dirt they have on him, and they got a million tricks up their sleeve, but hopefully not a glove is laid on this man because he's onto something. So we just talked about the 32-hour workweek bill that Bernie Sanders proposed. And again, I was shocked that there was a decent amount of media coverage over it. Usually when a good idea is proposed, nobody talks about it. Nobody cares. It's out of the public consciousness in 7 minutes. And it just dies. Dies a slow, sad death in the Senate or in the House. Well, this he proposed. And even though the prospects for it to pass are not great, if I'm being honest with you, you're not going to believe this. CNN decided Well, let's cover Bernie's 32-hour workweek bill. And let's frame it in a positive light. Huh? Excuse you? I did not see this coming. So let's watch and then we'll break it down. And I'll tell you why I think they felt comfortable enough to do this when they normally wouldn't do something like this.
Saying goodbye to the 40-hour workweek, people perk up. Well, that is what Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders is proposing this, and in a very serious way. He now has a bill that would cut the standard work week in the United States from 40 hours to 32 for the same amount of pay. Our numbers, minor guru, you mind the numbers? Harry Enten joins me now. All right, so Harry, a lot of people hear this and they scoff and they say, this is ridiculous. This is, you want to pay this people the same amount of money to work less. And when you work less, you get less and everything starts to fall down. You've looked at the numbers where this has been tried. What happened?
Yeah, there was a great global experiment that was done a few years ago on, you know, the 32-hour work week, four-day work week. And you know what happened to the companies that did it? The revenue actually went up. The revenue went up significantly, went up 38%. And employers rated employee productivity a 9 out of 10. So the fact is, in these companies that tried it, it actually worked out pretty gosh darn well, Aaron.
It's pretty amazing. I've been reading some of the studies about it. I mean, the reasons why. People having other things in their lives and being able to be all in at work when they're there. The average American worker works more than many European workers just on the average week. How does U.S. work week, though, stack up around the world?
Yeah, this is interesting, right? We like to compare ourselves to, let's say, the United Kingdom or, let's say, other European countries like France. And you'll say, okay, France and the U.K. on average. 29 hours per week. This includes full-time and part-time workers. But if you look at the U.S., 35. But Israel and South Korea actually work more than the United States do. So yes, if we compare ourselves to the Europeans, we work a lot more. But if you compare ourselves to other industrialized countries like those in the Middle East or those in the Far East, in fact, we actually work slightly less.
So will Bernie Sanders' bill pass?
You know what? I don't know if it will. Probably not. But I will say among the American public, it's actually something that's quite popular. The idea of a four-day work week.
Oh, I'm sure.
It is quite popular. Yeah. But it's not just two-thirds of overall. It's well more than two-thirds of Democrats, but even a majority of Republicans support a four-day work week. So you have those Republicans in the Senate scoffing at them, but their people, their constituents are actually, you know what? This could work out pretty decent for us.
Okay, that was bittersweet to watch. Because they're right about what they do. Oh my God, it's actually really popular. It's actually really popular, bro. But all of his ideas were popular. Almost every single one. In fact, we talked about it. How many times have I showed that Vox poll or have I tweeted that Vox poll in the midst? I think it was like in 2015 or 2016. They asked about, like, you know, the top things on his agenda. Single payer health care, for example. They did a whole higher taxes on the rich, raising the minimum wage. Every single one was popular. Even the idea of calling for a generic political revolution, even that was popular. So, like, they're like shocked, like, oh, look, turns out his ideas are popular. Yeah, almost all of his ideas are popular. You guys just don't cover it most of the time. And that's the problem. If every single CNN host did a segment exactly like this on this exact issue, that would change the numbers even more. And that would maybe get into the minds of some of the politicians when they see, hey, even corporate-ass CNN is sitting there like, hey, this is a good idea. Maybe I vote for it, right? So it's about changing the dialogue around this, change the discussion, change the emphasis and what they're saying and how persistent they are in saying it. And look, that's how good things happen. So now here's the question. This is the first time we've ever seen them, like, be honest and open and tell the truth about some Bernie Sanders proposal. Why? Why now? Why this issue? Why are they doing it? They've never done it before. They've never done a segment like this on Medicare for All, for example, where it's like, hey, would you look at that? It saves trillions of dollars and everybody gets health care and every other developed country can do it. And why can't we do it? And the polls show everybody wants it. They've never done it anywhere else. On any other issue, but they're doing it now. Why? The answer is staring us in the face, guys. The answer is staring us right in the face. Because when they've done the four-day work week studies, they've shown productivity goes up. It goes up. So it's very rare you get an issue where it's wins all around. It's not up in the air. It's not a question. It's not competing interests one against the other. Hey, it helps over here, but it hurts over here. It helps this group, but it doesn't help that group. That's how most things in this world are. The world is not black and white. The world is full of gray area and nuance. And so on most issues, it's like, well, you know, hey, we get funded by big pharma, so we can't say that, even though people want lower drug prices, and you got all these competing things. This is a rare issue where everybody's on the same side. The workers like it. Management likes it. The owners like it. The revenue goes up. people are happier while working harder in a shorter time frame. What's the downside? There's no downside. So even to the corporations, it's like, okay, would you rather purposefully keep revenue lower? Like, is that what you want to do? Keep doing what we're doing? Have people be less productive and more pissed off? Is that what you want? Is that what you want? No. Of course, it's all about maximizing profits to these people. So whatever maximizes their profits, the second they all actually really think and believe, oh, this will maximize our profit if we do a four-day work week, they'll all switch like that. But that's the thing, is I don't know if all of them will actually believe that, right? Because we it's not like if you do a study, everybody's like, oh, the study has spoken. That's right. No, you do a study, people, I think science is wrong. Like that's, we've seen it a million times, we've seen it on a million issues. My guess is a lot of the corporations will feel like that can't be true, right? And they'll just swat it aside. But CNN sort of has the leeway to tell the truth on this issue because they're run by their advertisers, corporate America, and there's an issue where it's almost like telling corporate America, hey guys, this is good for you too. So they have the leeway to tell the truth here. So anyway, a boy can dream. I hope that everybody comes to their senses and passes this, because again, it's a super rare issue where it's win-win-win-win-win-win-win all around to every single interest in the conversation. That almost never, not even almost never happens. That literally never happens. But here we are. Let's hope it gets through. I really hope, because this is a game changer. It's such a tiny little tweak, and it just makes everybody happier, more productive, etc. It's a no-brainer, but as per usual, no-brainers, I really don't want to hold my breath for it to pass, because then I'll probably be dead. All right, guys, so we have some behind-the-scenes reporting from NBC News here that I wanted to share with you. They say the following. Biden has grown angry and anxious about re-election effort. Biden locked up the Democratic nomination last week, but looking ahead to the general election, anxiety has seemed to increase. So, in other words, they've presented this like calm, cool, and collected front to the world, but secretly, behind the scenes, Biden is actually really angry, really anxious, really annoyed. They're going to explain how he's like yelling and cursing and stuff. All right, let's dive into it, and then I'll tell you what I make of it. So here's what they say. President Joe Biden was seething in a private meeting at the White House in January. Allies of the president had just told him that his poll numbers in Michigan and Georgia had dropped over his handling of the war between Israel and Hamas. Both are battleground states he narrowly won 4 years ago, and he can't afford any backsliding if he is to once again defeat Donald Trump. He began to shout and swear, a lawmaker familiar with the meeting said. He believed he had been doing what was right, despite the political fallout, he told the group, according to the lawmaker. Asked about the episode, Andrew Bates, a White House spokesman, said, President Biden makes national security decisions based on the country's national security needs alone. No other factor. So in other words, that is tremendous cope to say, what the voters want doesn't matter. Democracy, schmaflocracy. Don't care. Shut up. I'm going to do what I want to do. So he was angry. He was furious that people were criticizing him for arming and backing a genocide. That's what this is. At the ground level, the brass tacks, that's what this is. How dare you oppose me arming and funding a genocide? And he's flabbergasted by it. I will make the decision to arm the genocide no matter what it costs me politically. Okay, so then not only are you immoral and unethical, you're also a fucking idiot. Good to know. For months, Democrats have watched the 2024 campaign unfold with rising alarm as the sitting president struggles to gain ground against his defeated predecessor. Frustrations rippling through the party have reached the top, with Biden at times second-guessing travel decisions and communication strategies that have left much of the electorate clueless about his record. Interviews with nearly 20 lawmakers, president, past administration officials, and Biden allies show. So they talk to a lot of people to get this information, man. The starting gun for the general election campaign fired last week as Biden wrapped up the Democratic nomination, yet he is still searching for ways to impress upon voters that he deserves a second term by dint of policy achievements that eluded past presidents. History suggests it will be tough for him to recover. Biden's 38% approval rating at this stage in the calendar is lower than that of the last three presidents who went on to lose elections. Trump was at 48%. That's 10 points higher. George H.W. Bush was at 39%, and Jimmy Carter was at 43%, according to Gallup survey data. He's lower than all of them. That's insane. Biden has long believed that he isn't getting sufficient credit for an economy that has created 15 million new jobs. Looking to reach distracted voters who may be tuning in, he told his speechwriters before the State of the Union address to tone down some of the lofty rhetoric and plainly lay out what he's done, a person familiar with this speech preparations has said. So, look, there's a lot to say about this. I brought this up in detail on the show before, but there are three ways to run a campaign, three messages, potential paths to take if you're running a campaign. One strategy is, my opponent is terrible. Let me explain why he's beyond the pale. Never consider him horrible. Don't be dumb, right? That's one. The other one is, I'm awesome. Here's what I've done, and here's why you should like everything I've done. And then you list all those things. Then the third one is, here's what I'm going to do to make your life better. So here's my policy agenda for the future. When you get me in, I will do X, Y, and Z. And you go down the list. What they settled on was, my opponent is terrible. We're just going to hammer away on Trump over and over. There were some hints of that for a couple weeks. But now what they're saying is, okay, don't do that. Forget that. Let's do the whole, I'm awesome. Here are the things I've done. Let me list them for you. Okay. What has still not even been allowed in the room and in the conversation? The third thing. Here's what I'm going to do. Now, by the way, a good campaign would do all three of these things, and they'd balance them properly, right, depending on the needs of the moment. Biden was all in on the first thing, my opponent is terrible. Then they scrapped that and went all in on the second thing. I'm awesome. Here's my amazing record. Nobody has brought up the third possible thing. Here's what I'm going to do to make your life better. Here are the policy changes that are coming. Joe, in the midst of you arming and funding a genocide, what a very key demographic, crucial to your reelection, wants you to do, young people, is come out and say, we're not going to arm or fund the genocide anymore. In fact, we're going to condemn Israel at the UN, we're going to cut off the money and the weapons, and we're going to sanction their ass because we think they're doing a genocide. If he did that, he would win the election. He'd win the election if he did that. Because about half the people who are saying, I'm voting uncommitted, or I'm not with Biden, about half of them said, I would vote for him if he did the right thing on this. That'd be enough. But that doesn't even get brought up, guys. It doesn't even get brought up. It doesn't even get brought up. During internal discussions, he'll press aides about which parts of his record to highlight in different states, said a second person who was familiar with the matter. Surrounded by protective aides who want to minimize the chances of a flub, the 81-year-old president has chafed at restraints that he sees as counter to his natural instincts as a retail politician, a third person familiar with internal discussions said. He has felt cocooned at times and has been eager to get out more, meet voters face-to-face, and take the fight directly to Trump, said the third person, and a fourth, also familiar with the matter, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss campaign strategy and the president's private views. So in other words, all the older articles from like a couple weeks back or a month or so back were like, dude, we got to hide this man. He ain't there all there mentally anymore. He struggles to like walk. He's got to go up the shorter steps on Air Force One because he's tripped so many times. They're like, just give him some stability shoes and put him on the small stairs because that's the only way we're getting out of this, right? This article is now saying the exact opposite. That Biden's like, oh, I got to get out there more. I got to show everybody I still got it. And he's like mad at his handlers around him because he's like, why aren't you guys unleashing me? They're not unleashing you because you're liable to trip over yourself any given moment and start talking about something that happened in 1987 like it was yesterday. Like, that's why. So they should let me do my retail politician thing. Jesus Christ. So again, another area where you're getting a sense here of they're flip-flopping around like a fish fresh out of water here. They changed their strategy from anti-Trump all the time to actually, here's my amazing accomplishments. And they're changing strategy on hide him as much as possible to let him get out as much as possible. Oh, they don't know what they're doing, man. They are angry and desperate. Jesus. There are signs that some within his party are losing patience with him. Biden stood up in front of the world and said, I'm ready. I'm the guy who can take down Donald Trump, said Representative Adam Smith. So he goddamn better well do that. We don't have time for him to be worried about whether or not people are saying things right or the poll numbers are where they should be. I want focused energy and not defensive anger. So they go on to bring up, like, Biden is like, I can't do this alone. I need you guys, my surrogates, to get out there and do this thing for me and argue for me and make the case. And when you're not being aggressive enough, they need to unleash me so I can be more aggressive. And it's pointing the finger, everybody, your fault. Homie, it's on you. You're the one arming and funding a genocide. You're the one who decided it's okay for the pandemic-era social safety net expansion to go away. That hurt people at the bottom of the economic ladder in the middle. They're not okay with that. They're not okay with that. It's you that's having the massive senior moments week after week after week. It's on you. It's on you. Look in the mirror. So they are panicking, man. They are panicking. But now, look, here's my guess. The next article is going to be overconfidence from the Biden people, because I'm sure all of this work was done back when every single poll had Trump beating Biden. Now there's been a couple polls, like three or four of them, where Biden is up on Trump, like 1 point here, 2 points here, 3 points there, right? And now they're going to flip to overconfidence, cockiness again. Because they are live and die by the moment, these people. And it's just like finger in the wind, how do I posture, right? It's not about actual policy and making lives better. It's about how do I pretend like I'm on top of shit? And that'll be the next article. You wait for it. All right, I'll just give you this last piece and then we'll call it a day here, wrap up the story. At times, Biden gets suggestions that conflict with one another. Some advisors have told him he should walk faster out of concern that his gait feeds impressions that he's too old. And yet the White House is sufficiently worried about him tripping that he has taken to boarding Air Force One via a shorter staircase through the belly of the plane, foregoing the iconic image of the president waving from the main doorway high above the tarmac. He's probably a little mad at himself for not being more forceful with the staff, a person familiar with internal discussion said. Privately, Biden questions whether he should trust his gut instincts over the guidance coming from the array of advisors tending to his political interests, this person added. This man's been successful for decades in Congress and became vice president and president, said a fifth person who formerly served in the Biden administration. If you try to change the person, you're making a mistake. Let the president go out there and do his thing. So now it's a power struggle. It's a tug of war. Everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else. All of the advisors are saying one thing, Biden's saying another thing. He was going with the advisors, now he wants to go with himself. Let me repeat it. He's angry and anxious. He's yelling and cursing over where he's at in the race. If you think this looks like somebody or a group of people who have their shit together, I don't know what to tell you. That could not be further from the truth. Every year, I get perpetually more and more amazed at how low Fox News has fallen. It's not that they were ever good, but back in the day, they would at least, you know, do their little tap dance to pretend to be, we're fair and balanced. They'd have O'Reilly go out there and, you know, 90% of the time he's attacking Democrats, but then 10% of the time he throws it in there to attack Republicans just to keep this veneer of respectability and seriousness. That's gone. That is more than gone. Okay, look at this headline in Raw Story. Fox News introduces sponsored prayers to Jesus. Thank you again for this partnership. So, let me play the video for you. You'll get a sense of how insane this is.
It's the fifth Sunday of Lent, and our prayer series continues with a reading of prayer from the Hallow app. We all need it. Let's do it this morning. Close your eyes, if you would. Bow your head. Jesus, today we begin the holy period of Passiontide. In these last 2 weeks of Lent, help us understand the mystery of your sacrifice and surrender. Make us keenly aware of your love for us. We ask that you make yourself known to us. Help us to feel the grace of your presence. You journeyed to the cross for our sake. May we see ourselves the way you see us and come to believe that we are worthy of your abounding love. In these final days of Lent, help us to follow your holy example. Inspire in us the same sacrificial, selfless love you showed on the cross. Oh, Jesus, we surrender ourselves to you. Take care of everything. Thank you again to Hallow for this partnership during Lent.
Amen.
Amen.
Cut to a segment where they cheer on the carpet bombing of Palestinian babies. Oh, Jesus, how we yearn to act like you with love and compassion. Anyway, let's cheerlead the carpet bombing of babies in Palestine. Let's give more tax cuts to billionaires. That's the seamless transition is this to Donald Trump should be an emperor, overlord, god, king. Yes. Yes. All hail Trump. Okay. This was, without a doubt, the most Fox News segment I've ever seen. Why? Think about it. You have the over-the-top, preening, virtue-signaling fundamentalist Christianity. All hold to say a prayer. Speak the words of our Lord. You saw one of the hosts did the sign of the cross. So there's that. So the hyper Christianity shit mixed with, what was it ultimately? It was an ad. It was an ad for some Jesus-y app. So you get hyper capitalism mixed with hyper-religiosity. all with the, you know, under the guise of, look, we're wearing suits and ties and we're on a beautiful set. We're very serious people. We're as serious as they come. Look at us. What am I going to do with these people? Imagine, guys, you might say, Kyle, this is low-hanging fruit. You know, this is just like shooting fish in a barrel. This is the number one news network in the country. This is one of the most popular shows on that news network. That's what this is. And they're stopping to pray to Jesus in the middle of the show and do an ad for this app. What am I supposed to do with this, man? What am I supposed to do with this? So anyway, look, ironically, but God bless if this is what you want to watch. this is what you think is telling you the truth. Oh, imagine all the harm they have done to this country, this network has. And now they're reaching their final form. So this clip that you're about to see here is actually really interesting. I had to share this with you. So Judge Napolitano, he used to be a Fox News host. He's an interesting guy because he's sort of like a Ron Paul style libertarian. So what that means is he's going to be good on civil liberties issues. You know, he's against the government spying on people, for example. He's going to be good on the drug war. You know, he's going to want to end the drug war, legalize drugs. And he's going to be good on foreign policy stuff. Mostly wants to mind our business, not be do militarism all around the world and be the world police. He's going to be good on those issues. Now on economics, different question. As bad can be, right? Little Ayn Rand sycophant type. But interesting guy nonetheless. Because at least he's, you know, he's principled, even though I'm not with him fully on his philosophy. Okay. Now, he's doing an interview here. And he says something. Apparently, he talks to Trump, or he talked to Trump a decent amount. And he pushed Trump on something that he promised that he didn't deliver on. And then listen to what he says. This is about the JFK assassination. Watch this.
In my last conversation with President Trump in the White House, he called me a lot. And this is after January 6th. So it's 2 weeks before, or a week before he's leaving office. He wanted to run past me the names of people he was going to pardon and sentences he was going to commute. He wanted my opinion on them. Some of them I knew. I said, how you doing? He said, not too well. And he went off into a tangent about what he thought happened with the election. I said, you know, you made a promise to the public many times and to me privately that you haven't kept. What? I'll take care of it right now. I said, you promised you would release the records of the JFK assassination. He said to me, Judge, if they showed you what they showed me, you wouldn't have released it either. And I said, who's they and what did they show you? And then he said, Judge, someday when we're on the phone, and then he raised his voice, and there aren't 15 people listening to the phone call, back to a normal voice, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this makes it sound even worse. Who are they? Probably somebody in the intelligence community. What did they show him? JFK's brains blown out?
This is it. You know, it was said by one person that after the Kennedy assassination, there has been no president. They have only been factotums of the system since then. Yeah. it may well be the most decisive event in modern American history.
Assuming that story is true. And I got to admit, I believe it. What the fuck is in those files, bro? What is in those files? I remember a long time ago, there was actually a CNN article that came out. I'm talking probably over a decade ago now. And we covered it at the time on our show. There was a CNN article that came out. It went through all of the different conspiracy theories about JFK's death. Okay? So, of course, the mainstream theory, the official story, is Lee Harvey Oswald, lone gunman, acting on his own accord. That's the official narrative. But then you also had, there was one theory that the mafia killed him. Another theory that the Soviet Union killed him. Another theory that Cuba killed him. There's others too. Lyndon B. Johnson. So I read through this whole article. At the end of a CNN article, the person who wrote it says, we were able to dismiss almost every conspiracy theory about JFK's death, except one, that the CIA killed him. That was the one they weren't comfortable. This is CNN. We're not comfortable saying this one didn't happen. So now we come full circle to this. What the hell was in those files? What did they show him? Right? Or was it like an implied threat? You know? Hey, you release this. Who knows what they're going to do to you, right? Is it something like that? Because I have a hard time wrapping my mind around something that could make Trump say, if I showed you what was in those files, you also wouldn't have released them. I don't know. I almost look at that and go, was it Lyndon B. Johnson? Like, is that what it was? I don't know, man. I don't know. But that only makes me want to know more. There are some people who are all in. I mean, some people have dedicated their life to trying to figure out what the fuck happened with the JFK assassination. But suffice to say, the polls show this is like, this is one of the issues where the majority of Americans don't believe the official story. So look, something's up, right? Something's up. I don't know what it is. I can't tell you specifically what it is. But if this story is true, which I think it is, man, it's a hard one to wrap my mind around here. So I don't know. You guys put in the comment section, what the fuck do you think is in those files? Because now it opens the door to all sorts of fun speculation. So let's go at it. So the other day, Texas decided to do a law that a lot of conservative states have done recently. The law is basically blocking Pornhub, probably the biggest or one of the biggest porn websites. And the reason why is they say, we need to have an age verification process, and you put your ID in, and then you are able to access it. If you don't put in your information, you're not allowed to access the site. Now, they say, oh, this is to protect the kids. That's why we're just to protect the kids. Functionally, what they're doing is making an entire database of who you are and every little thing you're into sexually. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that is not something I think should be in the purview of government. I don't think there should be a list where every Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know every single one of their kinks. This dude is into feet. This dude is into BDSM. This dude is whatever, fill in the blank. I think that's a little too big government for me. When it comes to people's private lives, I want the government to butt the fuck out. But no, they hide behind the, where are you to protect the children? And they're basically effectively banning one of the most popular porn sites in the country in many of these states. So more on that in a minute. But so this hits Texas. Texas is a giant state. You all know that. There's a lot of fucking pissed off people, the fact that this passes. So look at this. Web searches for VPNs swell 400% in Texas as Pornhub blocks access. Wow. Google data reveals a sudden rise in search traffic in Texas for VPNs just days after Pornhub and other affiliated adult websites pulled out of the Lone Star State over its new law requiring all users to verify their age by providing a government-issued ID. So it says Pornhub and other porn sites. I don't know. Is this functionally exactly what it looks like, which is like basically banning online porn for the state of Texas? By the way, there was a Rogan podcast the other day. I clicked on the clip, and one of the things he was saying was, yeah, in Texas, they basically have this, freedom is like a religion in Texas. It's like a religion. You do what you want. I could not think of anything more authoritarian than this. I couldn't think of anything more anti-freedom than this. They literally want to control you jacking off. They want you to submit your information every time you want to bust a nut. It's honestly astonishing. Give a government-issued ID when you're horny. VPNs, or virtual private networks, allow internet users to encrypt their connections and obscure their locations to access region-restricted content. The subscription-based services have become increasingly popular in recent years, usually costing only a few dollars per month. Since Pornhub blocked access in the state March 14th, a VPN is now the only way to visit the site within Texas's borders. Google Trends show a more than 400% spike in search interest for the term VPN in Texas in the immediate days that followed, according to Variety. Dallas-Fort Worth topped the list of Texas metros with the jump in VPN Google searches, followed by Houston, Austin, Waco, Temple, Bryan, and San Antonio, the outlet said. The anti-smut law was signed by Governor Greg Abbott in June 2023, but didn't take effect until last week because of a legal challenge. I think every politician who votes for a law like this should be mandated by law to show everybody all of their porn search history. I want to know if Greg Abbott has the right to create a database of everything you've ever jerked off to if you're a citizen of Texas, I think we should have to broadcast in front of the entire country on the most popular TV channel everything he's jerked off to. I want to see a list. I want to see a list of everything this freak gets off to. Because this is what you're doing to everybody else. This is what you're doing. Don't give, what about the kids? Yeah, control your fucking kids. It's already not legal for the kids to access it. Make sure you're doing a good job parenting and making sure they're not going where they're not supposed to be going. Whatever happened to freedom? We believe in freedom. Apparently you don't. Apparently not even close. Apparently you're massive authoritarians. All right. So, anyway, this goes on here. But I want to show you guys. Look at this. Every state where Pornhub is blocked as of today. Look at this. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 states now. And, yeah, all of them conservative. Look, I said it earlier, or I said it yesterday, actually. I'm going to say it again today. Nothing pisses me off more than this. Politicians who suddenly have a come-to-Jesus moment when they're like, oh, we need to protect our people. We need to do something for our people. And you say, oh, really? What's that? What do you want to do in order to help your people? We got to ban TikTok. What? Ah, China's a data farming you. We got to protect you from China and the CCP. We need to protect our people. Really? How? We want to ban porn. You need to submit a driver's license when you want to jack off. You're not protecting anybody. You're not helping anybody. You're just restricting freedom and annoying the shit out of people. It never goes like this. You ready? We really need to look out for our people. We need to protect them. We got to do it. Really? How do you want to do that? Give everybody health care. We got millions who don't have health insurance right now. We got tens of thousands that die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. We got 41% of Americans in medical debt. Wipe out the medical debt to protect our people. It's never like, we want to help you. We want to protect you. So we're going to proactively do some shit to help you. It's always like, we need to help you, which is why we're going to ban this thing that you enjoy. What? I hate these people so much. I hate them so fucking much. Piss off. Get out of our private lives. Piss off. Get out of our private lives. It's the fuck. And honestly, look, keep it real. So libertarian types, they're going to be against this, right? They're going to fucking hate this, right? I find it hilarious that libertarians always tend to vote more Republican. When it's like, this is as big a restriction on freedom as I've seen, right? And I've never seen libertarians say, yeah, I'm a libertarian, but sorry, the Democrats seem to be less anti-freedom than the Republicans on a number of fronts, including this. So, I don't know how the fuck did we get here? We're living in a time with widespread economic depravity, right? People are struggling to pay the bills. Over 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Food insecurity is as high as 25% in some polls. People are working gig economy jobs, multiple jobs. People are struggling to get by. And then you're going to have all these states. And by the way, to be clear, there's also some blue state stuff that's restrictionist. Like a lot of blue states ban flavored vapes, right? So you got all these problems. And the response from the government at different levels, in this instance, the state level, let's ban porn. The federal level, let's ban TikTok. The state level, let's ban flavored vapes. So I know you're miserable, you're struggling, you barely get by. Let me come and take away some of the few things that you actually enjoy. I hate them all so much, man. I hate them all so much. Anyway, there you have it. The war on porn not only has begun, we're officially in the middle of it. All right, guys, that's the show. I love y'all very much. You know the drill. Everybody, please subscribe to the channel. Helps out massively. Costs you nothing. Click that bell icon so you get a notification every time a video drops. Thank you to everybody who supports this show on Patreon. If you haven't yet, please consider donating $5 a month or whatever it is in order to help out. And that's all I got for you guys, man. Also, thank you to everybody who tips on YouTube with the thanks button. You can do that below as well. Never talk to an advertiser. Proud of that fact. You guys help fund this show from the ground up. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Everybody have a great rest of your day, and I'll see you there. Peace.